Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf field specialist based out of Lemon. I will be your host for this episode, and Dr. Jamie Brennan will be our guest. Dr. Brennan is an assistant professor in the Department of Animal Science and our livestock grazing extension specialist for SDSU Extension. During this special SDSU Beef Day episode, Dr. Brennan will share research around precision livestock management on rangeland. So, Jamie, we often hear the words precision technology and cropping, but explain to the audience what precision livestock management means.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Yeah, as you mentioned, precision, you know, agriculture has been around for a while. We've been talking about it in livestock systems for probably about 30 years now. But really, most of the advances we've seen in precision ag have been limited to crops and cropping systems. As we start to kind of make this pivot and this movement to incorporating that to livestock systems, we're looking at, you know, what are different technologies that we could use to measure animals, how animals interact, you know, with their environment, what technologies are available out there?
So you have some goals when you're looking at precision livestock technology. So what are some of those goals that you
I think when we talk about precision livestock management, precision livestock technology, I really think it's just kind of incorporating new and different technologies to be able to measure and manage animals on the landscape. And part of that measuring process is measuring, you know, potential inefficiencies in the system, inefficiencies either with the animals or with whatever inputs that you're putting into that animal, to be able to, one, identify those inefficiencies, but also potentially correct for those. And so you could have increased efficiency either on our animal performance or level, or, you know, increased management of your natural resource base, whatever it may be that your objectives are.
So the dairy industry has been very progressive in incorporating technology comparative to the beef industry. Why is the beef industry lagging behind?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of challenges that are kind of unique to the beef industry. And like you said, the dairy industry has for a number of years had things like, you know, robotic milkers, you know, there's pedometers that they put on animals that's able to measure movement data and download that data off dairy cows, ear tags, smart ear tags that they've incorporated in the dairy systems where you can detect estrus in animals. And so there's a lot of technology that's been incorporated within dairy systems. And I think one of the reasons why it's been more successful in dairy systems as compared to beef systems is that you just have so much more interaction with your animals within those systems. You're bringing them in to a barn every single day, milking them, working them. It just provides a lot more opportunity to, one, put sensors on animals, but also be able to extract and get that data off of those animals every time that they come in. And so some of the ways that we've seen advancements within the beef industry really has mostly been limited to feed yards, kind of similar systems like dairy, where you kind of have much more opportunity to interact with your animals on a regular basis. And that really increases your opportunities to be able to collect more data on animals.
So I know you just mentioned the feedlot and things like that, and it's probably more specifically used in that. And I know you focus most of your work around rangeland, cows out on grass. And so we also know that our cell service and our Wi-Fi and all of that kind of stuff isn't always up to par to be able to utilize this technology. What are some ways that technology is changing so that we can start using them out on the range, you know, in areas that are very challenging to get cellular service and things like that?
Yeah. I think one of the, like you highlighted there, you know, one of the reasons why this technology has been successful in dairies and potentially feedlots is that you have a lot more infrastructure that's available within these. You have animals that are kind of concentrated in a centralized location. Within those locations, you often have things like electricity, internet service, Wi-Fi, you know, all these things help to be able to transmit data from, you know, sensors or whatever that's located on the animal to the centralized location. Now, if you have animals, like you said, out on extensive rangelands where they're, you know, maybe in a 2,000 acre pasture, you see them, maybe you go out there and check them every couple of days or once a week, but there's much less opportunities to, one, be able to collect that data off that animal, but also, you know, just much less opportunities to interact with those animals on the range. And so some of the technologies are really, it's kind of a advancements that we've seen in communication technology over the past couple of years. We're better able to transmit data out. And so one example would be, you know, looking at GPS tracking of animals, and if you can use what's called LoRa frequency, it's a low radio frequency data transmission. And so you're, you know, from a device that's being worn on an animal, it potentially be sending out data packets to a base station within, you know, maybe a 10 mile radius. So if you have this base station that's able to collect that data from the field and then transmit that up to the cloud, you know, it helps close some of those issues that you've had in the past of how do you get data from an animal like sensor systems out to, you know, a web application or a cell phone app so you could actually use that information. And so we still kind of have limitations, you know, where cell service is increasingly getting better in a lot of rural areas. And so it's not uncommon now where you might go out to some places and, you know, like upper near area in rural kind of northwestern South Dakota, where you could still, you know, get one or two bars of cell service where in the past you'd probably have nothing. And so I think we're improving cell coverage on a lot of areas in the land. You know, a lot of this information and data that's being transmitted, you don't necessarily need 5G and the latest, greatest cell coverage to be able to get information out. And so that really opens up a lot of opportunities to be able to collect more data on these systems and get that information in real time so you can make management decisions. And then kind of along those same lines, as you start moving further and further west, as you get kind of bigger and more extensive rangeland systems, you know, I think if you look at South Dakota, the average like U.S. Forest Service allotment is maybe in that like 3,000 or 4,000 acre range. If you get out to Arizona or Nevada or some areas like that, you might have pastures where you might have, you know, 150,000 acre allotment out there, and no cell coverage whatsoever. And so there's more and more coming online, kind of new technologies where you could have satellites up in space and sensors that are located on the animals or sensors that are located out in pastures, whatever you're measuring, could actually transmit that data directly up to a satellite. And so you no longer need that cell coverage and you're basically able to deploy these things anywhere on Earth. And so really that's, I think, a potential game changer as we start moving from precision livestock management from, you know, the dairy to the feedlot where you have animals concentrated in an area and you have good infrastructure to be able to collect information to truly being able to send and transmit data on some of the most rural landscapes that we have.
Well, I know you guys have been incorporating and researching some of that precision livestock technology at our SDSU Cottonwood Livestock and Range Research Station. Can you share some of what you guys have been doing there and maybe how, I know you said the rangeland creates some challenges. So could you share some of that technology that you guys have been researching there at the station and then how that technology could be incorporated into a farm and ranch?
Yeah, so I guess one thing you had mentioned is those challenges. That communication piece is one challenge that we have out there. But I guess the other challenge to highlight, that I'd like to highlight for this, is also that, you know, when you think about precision ag and cropping systems, you know, you have corn or whatever you're growing out there, you have a combine that's able to go out there and harvest those nutrients off the land. you have any number of sensors or technologies that you can mount on that tractor, that machine that you have there. It's quite different when you have animals that are actually out on extensive rangeland systems, because your animal is the harvester. It's the one having to go out there and capture those nutrients off the landscape. And you have, like we have throughout everywhere, kind of on rangelands, is you have highly diverse landscapes. So you have differences in topography, differences in forage quality and quantity, weather and climate exposure to these animals. You just kind of have a lot of different challenges in terms of, one, trying to measure your harvester, which is your animal, but how that animal interacts with your environment. You know, at our Cottonwood Research Station, we're trying to hone down and, one, try and measure as much as we possibly can of this environment, this landscape, and these animals and how they interact with it. And then try and use that to identify, you know, what are ways that we could improve efficiency or improve our management on the landscape based on these technologies. And so some of the things, like you mentioned, what we're looking at Cottonwood include like remote sensing. So using things like satellite imagery or drones to be able to measure, you know, plant communities and landscapes, GPS tracking and accelerometers that we can place on cattle. So we can get location of not only where they are, but what is the behavior that they're doing in these locations. Smart scales, we deployed these scales made by Sealock Technologies here in Rapid City, where you place them in front of your existing water tanks, and essentially every time an animal steps up to get a drink, you're able to record a weight on that animal. You know, green feeds, where you're able to measure enteric of methane emissions within animals, and last but not least, is virtual fencing, so improving our management. Other technologies, looking at precision management technologies, things like virtual fencing, where we're able to, you know, not just measure or monitor where those animals are on the landscape, but actually control that animal movement on the landscape and where we want them to graze, as well as precision feeding technologies. And so it kind of sounds like a lot, and it kind of is a lot at sometimes. We're really kind of not just limiting ourselves to one or two different technologies, but really kind of throwing a whole gamut of different technologies at these animals on extensive rangeland systems. And it's interesting and frustrating at the same time, because animals don't always want to use technology the way we want them to. But I think we're able to capture and generate just a tremendous amount of information and data that we've never been able to collect on animals grazing rangelands before.
So for folks that maybe are not familiar where our Cottonwood Research Station is here in South Dakota, it is in western South Dakota, so it is range conditions and is a working ranch, basically. And so just to kind of give you an idea of where that technology is being utilized. And so tell me how this various technology you just mentioned, whether it's the virtual fencing or the GPS tracking, how can this technology be beneficial to producers? And or is this technology to the point that it could start being incorporated into people's operations?
Yeah, I think some of it, you know, like I said, remote sensing and some of the one of the projects that we're looking at is kind of using big data analytics. So looking at satellite imagery, real-time climate data to be able to make predictions of forage quantity and quality in real time for producers. And so we're hoping to develop a web application where producers can go outline their pasture. You can see what your forage quality and quantity is in real time. And that can inform things like stocking rates, where you know your stocking rates are going to be dynamic year after year based on weather conditions. And so help kind of, one, improve management on the landscape, but also give producers more information to make decisions with. GPS tracking, you know, we had a presentation at Range Beef Cow about GPS tracking and accelerometers. And one of the things we touched on is with GPS tracking, there's more and more commercial options out there where you can actually monitor your animals in real time. So there's things like satellite GPS tracking ear tags or collars using that LoRa technology that I had mentioned earlier, where you could actually see where your animals are in real time. A lot of producers are kind of really excited about that possibility. You know, and one of the comments I had most of all after that was, if I could just know where my bulls are, at any given time, that would be a huge improvement for me. And so even if you're limiting that, maybe you're just putting those devices out on a small number of your animals, say 10 bulls that you have out there. Well, now you could have an alert to say, well, that bull's actually in the neighbor's pasture and I need to get it out of there before it breeds too many of its cows. And so I think that's, you know, a direct benefit that a lot of producers can kind of see and realize with some of that technology. Similarly, if you had an animal out, if you had a cow that get out of a pasture, or a number of cows, you could have that kind of real-time alert to say, hey, your animal's out. You need to go and get that animal back in. But also being able to check animals remotely. So maybe if you have leased land, for example, that's 60 miles away, you could potentially save yourself a few trips, you know, to go out check animals by pulling up on a computer and say, okay, I can see all my animals are there. They're in the pasture. You know, maybe you could have some health metrics assigned with that movement behavior. So you could say, okay, it appears that everything's acting normally, I guess. And, you know, with gas prices, as we all know right now, at $4 a gallon, if you save a couple of 60, 120 mile round trip out to your pasture, I mean, that can translate into actual economic dollars or, you know, actual money that you're saving, as well as that labor time that you're not spending on that as well. And so that's just a few examples, I think, of how some of this technology can be incorporated into an operation and also potentially benefit, you know, producers. Now, I think we're still kind of on the edge of a lot of this technology, and it's still kind of overcoming some of the hiccups and limitations as it's being deployed. But I would say in 3 or 5 years, I think a lot of it will be fairly proven for ranch operations.
Well, I know drones are, you know, pretty popular across the ag industry in general. But just the ability to go check all the water tanks to see if there's water in them, or to see if there is an animal off by itself, knowing then that's maybe an indication that there's maybe a health issue or something like that. And so, you know, drones are quite popular. And so, and I'm always impressed when I get to see drone footage. Uh-huh. And what it can do, so we don't have to bounce across the pasture to
right. And if you have sciatica like me, it's the middle of winter, and just that bouncing through a pasture really takes a toll on your back.
Having a drone, absolutely does. You
know, sending a drone out there to go check your water is a much more attractive option. And and I think with that example, with a lot of this, you know, none of this technology is ever going to replace the producer and replace that inherent knowledge of animals, how to work animals, how to, you know, properly manage the landscape. But there are a lot of kind of daily tasks like that that you might be able to automate somewhat to be able to save labor and time, which is often one of the biggest constraints for producers.
So you can kind of take that time that you're saving there and focus more on the business aspect again, instead of the day-to-day tasks or chores that we all have to do, but then we neglect the business side. So
yeah, it's kind of that $10 an hour versus that $100 an hour job. Right?
Absolutely. So I know you guys also have precision feeders out there, and they're on a project right now with some heifers. Could you share some information on that project and how those feeders have been working?
Yeah, so we had this project that we started that's using some of the C-Lock technology that links up precision feeder with these smart scale technologies that we have. And so kind of the objective of that is, you know, for heifer calves, if you're developing heifer calves potentially, you know, generally speaking, if you're trying to target those individual weights to about 60% of your mature cow weight when it comes to breeding. And so if you had a 1400 pound cow, I think that's about 840 pounds that you're trying to get at time of breeding. One of the challenges, obviously, when you have a number of animals and you're supplementing animals as a group or a herd, is that you have ones that will be under consumers, ones that will be over consumers. And so you might have this kind of wide range of weights when it comes time to breeding. In addition, your under consumers really aren't doing you any favors out there because, you know, they're eating forage or grass or hay or whatever, but they're not getting up the weight and might not breed. Likewise, your overconsumers are putting on too much weight, might be overconditioned, and you're essentially wasting, you know, excess feed on those animals. And so the hope is with these precision feeders is where you could actually target how much supplements you deliver to each individual animal. And so you might say, here's an animal that's kind of started off as calf at 530 pounds, you know, post-weaning, and you got another one that's 450 pounds. You might want to feed one, you know, a higher supplement ration, and the other one kind of feed a lower supplement ration, just so they kind of arrive at that 840 target weight when it comes down to breeding. So we're trying to use this, you know, in a way where we're linking this feeding and precision feeding, just kind of targeting supplement to individual animals with our precision scale data. Where we're collecting these daily weights on animals, and so we could actually kind of give an estimate every single day if we wanted to, or every week, on what's their average daily gain as we're moving through the season. And then kind of, can we dynamically adjust that feeding ration? So if they need more or less, you know, depending on if you had a cold snap or what have you, to hit those target weights for those animals. And so it's really, it's pretty amazing data when you start collecting that daily weight gain data on animals, you know, and I'm pretty blown away by it when I look at kind of plots and graphs and stuff like that, where, you know, for us in research, you know, we get more weights on our animals than most producers do, but it's not atypical for us to have maybe a weight at the beginning of a trial, say in November, and then maybe if we work on or debang somewhere in the middle of that, maybe catch another weight, and then catch another weight at the end of the season. And so you really have only a few data points to be able to gauge that animal performance. With these, it's really pretty amazing how much information and data you're able to gain off of those animals and look at ones that are really kind of the overperformers, the underperformers. You know, maybe you hit a cold snap and you could actually kind of see, you know, this big dip in performance and this rebound associated with this. And so really, there's a lot more information that we're gaining on these animals that I think will translate ultimately to how we recommend producers manage them.
I think it's really exciting in regards to the heifer development side, just the influence of their performance during that development phase. So from weaning until breeding, and how that influences their cyclicity, and then also overall conception rate too, whether you do AI or not, or overall pregnancy rate. I'm very excited as this research goes on to see that.
Yeah, you know, I talked to our colleague in our office when I was just playing around and plotting some of the data the other week. We were looking at it's called quantile regression. You can kind of think of it like, you know, if you take you have a new baby and you take your baby into the doctor's office and they measure its head and measure its height, and they give you a percentile of, you know, it's in the 50th percentile or 90th percentile for weight or wherever that is, looking at that for individual animals and average daily gains. And so you might have some heifers that are kind of in that bottom 10 percentile, some that are in that top 90 percentile. When I kind of think about how a producer having this information, how can they use that to be able to track, you know, which animals are in these different percentile groups, and maybe that determines which ones are getting sold off as, you know, calves, you know, getting sold off as yearlings at this time of year, which ones are, you know, are going to go to breeding. Just how can we use this information to kind of inform management decisions to be able to get a better, more uniform group of animals?
Absolutely, because we know a more uniform group of animals equates to more dollars, typically.
And likewise, in the summer, as we're collecting this data on yearling steers in the summertime, you know, as your heavies kind of start topping off and slowing down on grass, can you, after a month, take those heavies and ship them off to the feed yard, because essentially they're out there eating a lot of grass, forage, but you're not necessarily seeing a lot of returns in terms of poundage on them. And so by removing different groups of animals using this data, maybe you can extend your grazing season for animals even longer. So those are just kind of some of the questions that we're looking at with some of this data that we're collecting.
Well, I'm really excited as the research continues and reports come back, and to hear it all, how all of it is working. I do know, like you said, probably the biggest challenge with the technology is the animal itself, and knowing that it's supposed to stay here, but yet it's bullheaded enough to go right through that virtual fence. Those kinds of things. I'm excited about the virtual fencing too. I think I've mentioned this maybe to you in the past that it would be awesome to be able to create virtual fences at during breeding time where they continuously get moved up to the corrals when they're coming into heat. So my goal for you is to create a technology that determines estrus and then a virtual fence that just moves them up. So I don't have to go gather. So technologies exist. I just don't know if we've ever combined them right. So
yeah, and I think that's where the interesting intersection of this is all going to be. I mean, there's a lot of there's just tons of technology. Well, what's good and what's not good, I think we still need to determine what's practical for ranch operations. But I think more than the individual technology itself is how do we integrate these different ones together? So how do we integrate, you know, things like that remote sensing and that satellite imagery with your virtual fence technology to inform rotations, or like, you know, with our feeding project, how do we integrate those scales with that precision feeder to kind of reach, you know, animal target weight gains? And I think really as you're looking at these as individual pieces of technology is interesting, but I think maybe the future might be how do we integrate these different systems and pieces together to better inform our management.
That's awesome. Well, I also know obviously with this livestock precision technology, it's opening up a lot of new fields for students. Whether you go to SDSU or any other university, maybe could you share some more information on this and some new opportunities beyond, you know, the production side of things, but the technology development and maybe opportunities there?
Yeah, and so some of the conversations we've had for a while is how do we kind of develop the next generation of animal science students that are coming on board? And so I think it's really important for students to be well grounded in a lot of, you know, basic principles of feeding, nutrition, animal husbandry and management, rangeland science. But as these technologies become much more prevalent and much more in use, I think training students that are also well versed in different software packages, or students that are well versed in data science and data management, you know, kind of going back to that. Let's say I have 60 animals and I get a weight at the beginning of the trial and a weight at the end of the trial, you know, that's 120 data points. Well, now if I'm getting multiple weights a day, you're now having thousands and thousands of data points that you're having to generate. Well, one that you're generating, but then developing students that have the skills to be able to take that information and that increased kind of level of precision and turn that into management recommendations, or turn that into some kind of knowledge that a producer can utilize. And so I think really we're kind of talking about how do we train students so they're kind of well grounded in these background principles, but also, you know, have an eye to the future and able to accommodate and adjust to kind of all these new technologies that are coming online and answer questions for producers that are interested in utilizing these technologies. Likewise, I think just having, you know, students that could help bridge that that gap sometimes between engineers and practitioners of this. And so you might have, not to knock engineers, but you might have some engineers, you know, in California that design some kind of precision livestock technology that really don't have any knowledge of ranch operations, any knowledge really of animals. They just are able to, they're very effective at developing and creating the technology, but they don't always have the background in livestock production to say, hey, that's going to work, or hey, there's no way that's ever going to be put on an animal without getting destroyed. You know, and so I think having students that are able to communicate effectively between these different worlds, I think is going to be very important.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jamie, for being here on this episode. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you want to share with the audience?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we really got into virtual fencing all that much.
Let's talk about virtual fencing then.
Well, that's kind of, I guess, the hot topic that I guess we probably get most questions about is virtual fencing and most interest on that. And so, yeah, we deployed at our Cottonwood Research Station this virtual fence technology this past year. And so we'll be looking, this will be our second year that we're having that implemented. And so how those work is there's basically a collar that you place on each animal within your herd. And this collar communicates with the base station. And that base station communicates data up to the cloud. And so, you know, the user is able to go in there, you know, potentially draw where their pasture boundaries are that they want them. Those pasture boundaries are going to get sent from that base station to those collars. And those collars, using GPS technology, are able to know where they are in relation to those virtual fences that you created. And so as animals start approaching that virtual fence boundary within there, they kind of first get an auditory cue of, hey, you're coming near this virtual fence boundary. As they proceed kind of further and further into that virtual fence boundary, they'll get an electrical stimuli similar to a polywire fence, with the objective of kind of turning that animal around and keeping them within your management zone that you have there. And so essentially it's not all that different from, I guess, how you would train a dog to an electric fence, right? Is they hear that auditory cue, and eventually they just start associating that auditory cue with, I need to turn around, so you don't need that electrical stimuli. And really it just opens up a tremendous opportunity, I think, to be able to manage animals on the landscape in ways that really weren't possible before, you know, to where you could, if you're just even at a simple example of just setting up a rotational grazing schedule within a pasture, and you can basically outline that for your entire summer. And I'm going to turn this fence on this date, this one off on this date, and dynamically rotate your animals around without actually having to install, you know, physical fence out there, or have the added time of going out there and moving your animals along with that.
Well, and I think an opportunity to do more targeted grazing too. So if you do have a pasture that is predominantly cool season introduced in the spring, but then a part of it is also more native grasslands, maybe trying to target them in that area of introduced. Mm-hmm. So that way you're not having a big impact on that native range at that time. So,
yeah, so you could, yeah, like you said, graze heavily early in the spring, those native grasses, and maybe delay your grazing on some of those. I think I mixed that up.
Yes, you did.
As I'm saying it, I go, that doesn't sound like something we recommend. But yeah, so target your grazing, like you said, on those invasive cool season grasses, and maybe hit those hard early in the season, and then kind of move on to your native grass. They have more time to grow and develop and get more growing degrees on there. Yeah, I think there's just a lot of applications for, you know, how do we manage environmentally sensitive areas? So like riparian areas are always a concern for water quality. And so you can virtually fence out animals from, you know, riparian areas where they're naturally attracted to, and increase, you know, your stream bed, or increase water quality on your operation. I'm certain there's probably a lot of folks that are looking at, you know, applications for managing wildlife in the habitat. So like sage grouse is a big species of concern in the West. And there's been some research that's shown that, you know, depending on the timing of grazing, you know, cattle could either improve or negatively impact sage grouse habitat. So just having that ability to time that grazing to improve your wildlife habitat through cattle, you know, on a sage grouse select, and then exclude them for the rest of the year from that area without actually having to go out there and put in more fence and more water and all that stuff. You know, I think it really just opens up a lot of different opportunities for managing your animals on the landscape.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you, Jamie, for joining us for this episode. And we look forward to visiting again sometime. I'm sure there's lots more that we can share as that research develops and we get more data points back and you guys are able to create some of those apps and various things like that that you're hoping to do through this research. So again, once again, this has been Cattle HQ brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, remember, attitude is everything. Pick a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.